Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Bring in show music, please.
Hi, I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on Squawk Pod. Food prices surging in the U.S. and changes to the heartland. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack on turning farmers into entrepreneurs.
We've been far too focused on just productivity, and that has driven many, many, many people off the farm. We've lost 544,970 farms.
The top schools failing at inclusion. The Anti-Defamation League giving some colleges bad grades on combating anti-Semitism on campus. ADL CEO Jonathan Greenblatt joins us.
If your idea of diversity, equity, and inclusion perpetuates the exclusion of Jews, that's wrong.
Plus, Amazon hits a record high on Wall Street. The retailer slash cloud provider slash AI play can maybe do everything. Analyst Mark Mahaney on the rally.
It's our number one pick in the internet space.
It's Friday, April 12th. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue it, please.
Good morning, everybody. It's a Friday. Here we go. Welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We are live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick, along with Andrew Ross Sorkin. Joe is out today. Let's take a look at how things are shaping up on this Friday morning. And after a pretty wild ride this week, over the course of the week, what we've seen not only with equity markets but also with treasuries, the NASDAQ was the big standout yesterday, adding more than 1.6% to close at an all-time high. Apple helping with that. It was up more than 4% on reports that it could be overhauling its Mac line. But to the Treasury market, let's take a look at what's been happening with yields. Again, this has been a wild week for yields. You are looking at the 10-year yield a little bit lower, but it's still well above 4.5% at 4.53 right now. The 2-year note sitting just below 5% still at 4.92. Also, let's take a look on crude oil prices this morning. Those prices have been moving higher in recent weeks on rising tensions in the Middle East. And in fact, this morning, you see things up by more than a dollar for WTI, $86.05 a barrel.
Apple shares climbing more than 4% yesterday, its best trading day since May 5th, 2023. JP Morgan analysts saying that Apple shares are getting more attention from hedge fund investors, partially due to its recent stock slide. Apple shares are down, as you might know, more than 5% so far this year. The tech giant also reportedly making a big move to boost Mac sales. Bloomberg reporting that Apple plans to overhaul the entire line with new chips, highlighting AI.
Morgan Stanley is expected to report results next week. That stock dipped on reports that the financial giant is under investigation. The Wall Street Journal says multiple federal regulators are probing Morgan over how it vets clients at the bank's wealth management division who are at risk of laundering money. The SEC, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, and other Treasury Department offices are looking into whether the bank has adequately investigated the identities of prospective clients and their sources of wealth. Morgan Stanley shares right now down by about 4 cents, but there was a dip on that stock yesterday. You can see it right there in the chart.
Meantime, shares of Global Life attempting to recover after tumbling more than 50% yesterday. The life insurance giant responding to a new short seller report from Fuzzy Panda Research. See that you saw that name, right? Fuzzy Panda Research. Just want to make sure everybody got that. It alleges multiple instances, but maybe not so fuzzy, by the way, multiple instances of fraud at the company, including policies written for dead or fictitious people. In a statement, Global Life saying the research mischaracterizes facts and uses unsubstantiated claims. So we will watch that. Stock back up about close to 10% this morning, but obviously took a real tumble. After that report, not so fuzzy.
A drop of 50% on the week. The Magnificent Seven doing most of the heavy lifting for the NASDAQ. Amazon hitting an all-time high. NVIDIA gaining more than 4%. For more on the tech sector and internet stocks in particular, we are joined by Mark Mahaney, Evercore ISI, head of internet research. And Mark, you are seeing, you know, the NASDAQ really picking up. And again, it's those big stocks that are doing it. Why don't we start with Amazon? Because I think that's your best long-term call for large caps. Is that correct?
That's right. It's our number one pick in the internet space.
Why?
Well, we think we had a little bit of an inflection point. So we think we have three fundamental catalysts this year. We're going to have the reacceleration in AWS growth. We're going to have the attainment of record high retail operating margins. And I think in that shareholder letter yesterday and in the interview with Andrew, I think we got a couple of new data points to that.
It's going to take a lot for people not to buy detergent or shampoo or things like that. And you can see that in the growth of our everyday essentials business, which last, you know, Q4 of 2023 was over 20% year over year. Some of that is because people are going to buy all the time, but some of that is just because of the speed that we have and we're getting to people so they consider us for more. But people are still, they are still buying. They're just being careful about what they shop for.
I think for the company as a whole, I think we're going to have record high free cash flow margins this year. So when you have that kind of come together, I think you get a little bit more of a re-rating in the stock. You put 25 times free cash flow on next year's numbers and you get something like a 220 stock price. You know, this could go to 25, 30 times free cash flow for an asset that can probably grow free cash flow at 40%. I think that's reasonable. You could get up to 250. So we think there's valuation support. Of all the internet stocks, there's very few dislocations left, frankly. But I think Amazon is still one of them, still high quality asset. It's our number one pick.
In terms of what you're seeing right now, just with AI and what that could mean for Apple, I mean, that's the stock that has been under a little more pressure this year. What do you think when you check those things out?
Well, I don't cover Apple, but, you know, AI, generative AI is the number one issue out there for tech companies. And I generally think it's a tailwind for, especially for digital first tech companies. Most internet companies, most of the high quality internet companies have been investing in AI for several years. If I just pivot back to Amazon, I mean, this is a company that can win a couple of different ways. It improves products and processes on the retail side of the business. It helps the ad targeting, ad creation. That was kind of an interesting point that came out yesterday. And then on AWS side, you know, the Gen AI revolution is not going to be televised. It's going to be on the cloud. And it's going to, somebody's going to need to store it. Somebody's going to need to compute it. And AWS is very hard to see anybody doing more compute, more storage with Gen AI than AWS.
The other huge advantage they have is the infrastructure they've built up just on the retailing side. I mean, Andy Jassy laid it out in his letter, the idea that they can deliver 7 billion items same day. I mean, that is something that's pretty hard for anybody else to surmount.
So there's two really key points here, Becky. One is that they built these moats around their business. I mean, this is their competitive advantage. It's logistics. They can serve an item that is, you know, go from click or, you know, or click to your doorstep more cheaply than anybody else can. And that means they can also do it faster than anybody else can, too. What an advantage. So you mentioned the 7 billion number, but now where you are in a kind of investment cycle, they're in harvest mode. So that dramatic investment cycle that really crushed the stock or really caused the stock to underperform for 2 or 3 years, you're on the backside of that now. So you're going to have that number that they gave out yesterday, that for the first time since 2018, you're starting to see the cost per ship or cost to deliver decline by about 45 cents. You're going to hear that again, I think, next year and the year after that. That's where you are in the cycle. That means that margins are going to be rising for this company. It's a great spot for investors to be in. You're on the other side of the investment cycle.
Hey, Mark, how do you think, though, about Amazon as it relates to, and really the AWS business, specifically as it relates to Microsoft, as it relates to Google? And the reason I ask is there has been a view among some that they were behind when it comes to these large language models. I think Andy Jassy is taking the approach that all these large language models, not that they're going to become commodities, but that they aren't ultimately going to be the important element that's going to change everything, and that having an exclusive relationship with an OpenAI or someone else isn't the thing that's going to change everything. Do you have that same view or no?
Maybe Andy's right. Maybe he's wrong. It's a little unclear to me. And if I sort of think this is the one big risk to an Amazon bull like myself. If in 2 or 3 years from now, we look back on this and say this was the moment at which AWS really lost its cloud leadership in terms of product innovation and market share, I mean, that's a plausible scenario. And that would be the one thing that would really de-risk or that would take out the right. Long call here. I don't think that's true. And I think Amazon's got this wonderful advantage, this first mover advantage, the scale advantage. They've got great data security. There's a lot of advantages they have, but there's no question competitive risk has risen enormously for Amazon over the last 5 years.
But do you think they are building, and I made a couple of references in my questions to him about it yesterday, and if you could tell, he was, I think, he didn't want to really address it, in part because I don't think they've announced it publicly, but there is a large language model project inside Amazon, privately called Olympus, that is, you know, I think if they get their way, going to be as good, if not better, ultimately than a ChatGPT or the like. But clearly they are behind in terms of building that. How important is a project like that in your mind?
I think it's extremely important. And I think you're right. I think I don't know that they missed the Gen AI trend, but they weren't at the cutting edge of it, I guess I'd say. I know that this company's invested a lot in AI over the years, but it just seems like when it came to enterprise solutions and the rollout of Gen AI tools, they did seem to be caught a little bit offsides. Whether they can catch up or not, my guess is that they can, given their inherent advantages with their scale and data security. But it's possible they don't. And I think this is something that they absolutely need to nail down, their LLM offering.
Hey, Mark, thank you very much for joining us on this Friday morning. It's good to see you.
Thanks, Becky.
Cheese will be next.
If you missed Andrew's interview with Amazon CEO Andy Jassy, please check out our Squawk Pod feed wherever you're listening now. Scroll up and check out yesterday's episode. The full interview is there for you. Up next on this podcast, TikTok, Insta, Snapchat, different platforms, but now all the same idea. Julia Boorstin on The Imitation Game in social media.
It's really about engagement. How do you get people to not just spend time on the platform, but spend even more time on the platform?
And zeroing in on agriculture, bolstering American farms and curbing food inflation, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack.
Whether it's November of 2024 or November of 2028, I think we're going to see a much different rural economy, and I think we're going to see a growth that we haven't seen for quite some time in rural places.
We'll be right back.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
This is Squawk Pod.
You are watching Squawk on CNBC. I'm Andrew Ross Sorkin, along with Becky Quick on this Friday morning.
The push in Washington, D.C. to ban TikTok seems to have bipartisan support, but now it is stalling in the Senate and the company is facing some pretty big headwinds. Julia Boorstin joins us with more on all of this. Julia, good morning.
Good morning to you, Becky. Well, TikTok is certainly far bigger than it was when it last faced a potential ban. But now, as this week, Senator Mitch McConnell called for action towards banning the app, it is facing a new challenge of keeping up its growth. Just yesterday, TikTok did have a big win. Taylor Swift's songs returned to the platform after a 10-week hiatus. This ahead of the release of her coming studio album next week. But TikTok and Universal Music Group, the world's largest music label, continue to be in a standoff. The label pulled its songs from the platform and accused TikTok of trying to bully it into accepting a deal worth less than its prior contract. This also comes as TikTok rolls out a new app called TikTok Lite in Europe. It gives users rewards, financial rewards, for engaging on the platform or inviting friends to sign up. Now, it's also in the early stages of experimentation with a new app called Notes that's for sharing photos with captions, though the company says there are no plans yet to make it broadly available. Now, this experimentation with formats similar to Instagram and YouTube comes at a time while time spent on TikTok flatlined in the past year compared to Instagram's 10% growth, according to Sensor Tower. Now, this is quite a change from the days when all of those platforms, like Instagram and YouTube, were copying TikTok's short-form video format. Becky?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a you copy me, I'm going to copy you right back, right? This is, you guys came up with Reels, we're going to come up with our version of what you do.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's so interesting about this Notes app. And look, TikTok was very clear. There's a long way before we might see this app in the U.S., but it looks and feels a lot like what Instagram's for sharing photos with a little text of a caption. Now, of course, now Instagram is something totally different. And Reels, which is a TikTok-like feature, is very much and probably increasingly front and center. But you have to look at the fact that, you know, TikTok may have grown incredibly quickly. But now if it's going to keep up that growth in terms of its user base, it's now 170 million U.S. users. It's really about engagement. How do you get people to not just spend time on the platform, but spend even more time on the platform? And Instagram is posing some competition there.
Imitation, the highest form of flattery. Julia, thank you. We learned in this week's CPI report that grocery prices were unchanged in March compared to February. Year over year, the so-called food at home category was up by just 1.2%. But prices for dining out jumped by 4.2% year over year. Joining us right now to talk food inflation and much more is the Agriculture Secretary, Tom Vilsack. And Secretary, thanks for being here today.
It's good to be with you.
Let's talk first about inflation, because that's the issue that that people are watching so closely. Definitely, when you're looking at the month-over-month numbers, inflation is down for food at grocery stores, at least. But we are looking at higher commodities prices, and it has a lot of people concerned about what's in the pipeline. Where do you think we stand right now?
Well, in terms of commodity prices, actually, commodity prices have come down quite a bit. And the result of that is I think farmers are a little stressed. You have to remember that farmers only get about 15 to 20 cents of every food dollar. So commodity prices have less of an impact than perhaps supply chain disruptions, which is why I think the president's been so focused on making sure that we strengthen the supply chain. Also looking at ways in which people can better cope with whatever the inflation rate might be. That's why he's focused on things like junk fees, tax relief with child care tax credit, things of that nature, making it a little bit easier for families. He often talks about the bottom up and the middle out. And that's basically what we're trying to do.
There's a story on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. Just when you mention what you guys can do to fight inflation, the Journal points out that you've got very few tools you can do to fix inflation.
Well, I think one of the things we're doing is trying to create more competition, certainly in the processing side. That certainly impacts and affects food prices. I think we're trying to improve the transportation system. If you can get goods from here to there more efficiently and more effectively, that's going to make a big difference. And again, I think there are ways in which the administration is trying to figure out ways to help the pocketbooks of American families. These junk fees is a big issue. I was at a meeting the other day where people were talking about Ticketmaster and the cost of the service to get tickets to the NCAA women's basketball tournament. The service charge was almost as much as the ticket. So I think that there are ways in which we are making a difference. Obviously, wages are up as well. We've got an economy that I think is the envy of the world at this point in time. We obviously want to continue to do that.
When you talk about strengthening the supply chain, how do you go about doing that when it comes to food?
Basically, two things. One, creating a more local and regional food system so that we're not as reliant on just a handful of processing facilities, for example. We've invested over $1 billion in nearly 400 projects across the United States to expand access to processing capacity. Again, strengthening the transportation system. As we invest in roads, bridges, rail systems, ports, and so forth, that's going to allow us to get product to market more quickly and more efficiently. So it's a combination of a number of things, none of which are easy, and none of which can be done quickly. Right?
They take time, and in the meantime, the investments from the IRA could very well push inflation higher, because it's money that's pouring into the economy to create jobs for some of these things along the way. But that does create some inflationary pressures.
One of the things that I think is missed about the IRA is the fact that it's paced. It's not as if all this money is all of a sudden showing up in the economy. It takes time to get a contract for a road construction. It takes time to fix the rails system. It takes time to improve ports. This resource is going to be stretched out over a period of time. The money that we have at USDA from the IRA and the infrastructure law are stretched over a period of years. So I think you're going to see more of a measured impact and investment in the economy. Overall, what we're going to see is a much stronger and much more competitive American economy.
What do you think happens post-November? Will it have a meaningful impact, you think, on the inflationary picture of who the president is?
Well, I can't talk about elections in this interview, but what I can talk about is I think we've put in place, certainly in rural places, we've put in place a new structure, especially for American agriculture. The reality is we've been far too focused on just productivity, and that has driven many, many, many people off the farm. We've lost 544,970 farms since 1981. We've lost 151 million acres of farmland. I don't think anybody's satisfied with that, so that's why we have put in an entrepreneurial model where we're now allowing small and mid-sized farming operations multiple ways to make a living. Additional income streams from climate-smart agriculture commodities to agricultural waste being turned into a wide variety of new products to renewable energy, creating an opportunity for energy to be a commodity for farmers, to that local and regional food system where farmers get 50 cents of every food dollar instead of 15 or 20 cents of every food dollar. So a combination of investments, nearly $20 billion to be invested over the next 3 to 5 years to create this system. So whether it's November of 2024 or November of 2028, I think we're going to see a much different rural economy. And I think we're going to see a growth that we haven't seen for quite some time in rural places.
I mean, farmers have gotten hit hard too, especially small farmers, by the very inflationary pressures on things like fuel. Prices hit them hard, too, because they see some increase, perhaps, in what they're selling, but especially if you're a small farmer.
Best 3 years in farm income in the last 50 years and arguably ever. Liquidity strong, true. Prices for inputs have been up, but we've also worked on trying to reduce the cost of fertilizer, for example. How did we do that? By investing resources in 42 projects across the United States to expand domestically produced fertilizer, no longer being as responding to what happens in Russia and Ukraine and so forth.
Right.
Yeah. So there are a multitude of ways in which we're helping. This renewable energy opportunity, lowering energy costs for farmers. We've had over 6,000 investments under the Inflation Reduction Act in farms to put in solar systems, biodigesters, wind turbines, bringing costs down and creating the opportunity for those farmers to actually produce excess energy, which in turn can allow their REC, their rural electric cooperative, to bring rates down for everybody in the area. So I think it's a much brighter future. I'm excited about the fact that for the first time in over 10 years, we've actually seen an increase in the population of rural places. I like the idea that we've seen a reduction in poverty. Employment rates in rural places now back to pre-pandemic levels, unemployment at historic lows in rural places, and persistent poverty, areas that have forever had poverty rates above 20%. We've actually seen a decline in a number of counties in that category. So I think there are a lot of positive signs. We just need to be, I think we need to continue to do what we're doing, bottom up and middle out.
Secretary Vilsack, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Coming up on Squawk Pod, the Anti-Defamation League out with report cards for U.S. colleges, grading them on anti-Semitism and university responses to discrimination against Jewish students. Who passed, who failed, and why it matters, with ADL CEO Jonathan Greenblatt.
You can't just take the entire dimensions of a university and distill it into one grade. But what this grading system does do is, for me as a parent, it allows me to know, is the school doing enough?
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
You're listening to Squawk Pod from CNBC. Today with Becky Quick and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Here's Andrew.
Stand Andrew by. Up and Andrew. Cue.
And the Anti-Defamation League is out with a report card for universities grading 85 schools on rates of anti-Semitism and campus responses to discrimination against Jewish students. MIT, Harvard, and Princeton are among those who failed. They got an F, while Brandeis and Elon University receiving A's. Joining us right now with more on this, Jonathan Greenblatt, CEO and National Director of the ADL. So, most people who go to Harvard get straight A's to get into Harvard.
Right.
And now you're giving them an F. They're not going to be used to that.
Well, look, it is long overdue for these universities that, again, issue grades to get graded themselves and how they're handling Jewish students. And what I mean by that is, you know, there has been anti-Semitism on these campuses for years, but after 10/7, Andrew, it exploded. And so that was the point of the report card, was to create an objective baseline, an analytic framework to evaluate how are they doing and to encourage them to do better.
Well, so that was what I was going to say. This is like, I mean, now that you have this grading system, mm-hmm. have you gotten a response from these universities?
Oh, yes.
And is it like the U.S. News and World Reports, which, by the way, has perverted the education system its own way, but
sure.
people desperately want to be higher ranked on the
right.
system. So I assume people don't want to get an F, and they were hoping that next year they will get an A.
Well, it's a good question. I mean, we thought about, as we were thinking about doing this, we thought about what's the best way to approach this issue? What's the best way to encourage a race to the top? And because I heard from parents all over the country, is it safe for my child to go to this school? Students would say to me, or applicants, is it okay if I go to a Harvard or an MIT? They want to know, will they be adequately protected? Right. Will they be supported? So we thought about a ranking like that, but that's the wrong idea. For us, we want everyone to get an A. It's not grade inflation, so this will hopefully push them to do better.
Let me ask you a serious question.
I hope they're all serious.
I know, but this is I want to just put it on the table.
Shoot.
You got kids?
I got three.
How old?
20, 19, and 14.
Okay.
And one of them's at an Ivy League school.
Right. So here's where I was going to go with this. Let's say the 19-year-old one was 17.
Yeah.
Okay? And let's say they got into any one of the schools that you just gave an F to.
Yep.
Including Harvard, et cetera.
Yep.
Okay? Which people would say, oh, my God, I got my kid into Harvard. I won the parent lottery. I've done yep. everything right.
Yep.
Would you tell your child not to go to that school?
So, look, so again, my son is at one of the schools that did very, very badly. But the truth is you can't just take the entire dimensions of a university and distill it into one grade. But what this grading system does do, Andrew, is for me as a parent, it allows me to know, is the school doing enough? Are they taking action? Do they have the right policies? What's the climate like? So again,
But when the parent calls, take your own kids out of it. When some parent is calling you saying, my kid's a senior, just got into XYZ schools. I know they got an F on all of your report cards. Are you saying to them, okay, go to the school that has an A, what are you saying to them?
What I'm saying is go in eyes wide open. You need to know, and your student needs to prepare for what's going to happen. Let me give you an example. I spent the day yesterday at Harvard Law School. This is arguably the top law school, not just in the United States, in the world. And the stories that I heard from the Jewish students were abominable. I heard about a student government, you know, literally throwing the rules, you know, out the window in order to pass anti-Israel resolutions. I heard about Jewish students who have been isolated, alienated, and I heard about an administration that's not helping them, not responding to emails, not responding to phone calls, et cetera.
What did the administrators say when you issue a grade like this?
You know, look, we worked with Claudine Gay at Harvard, and we're talking to Alan Garber now. Some of these administrators, and I've got, you know, in emails in my inbox this morning from university presidents saying this, and from parents saying this is unfair. This doesn't adequately represent life at my school. But you know what? If you don't have the right policies, Becky, if you haven't taken the right actions, if you're not supporting your Jewish students, the grade speaks for itself.
Let me ask you a different question. We were talking about DEI.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that's very interesting that just happened was that Harvard yesterday decided they were going to bring back standardized tests.
I saw that.
And these are all, in some ways, interconnected issues.
Uh-huh.
Is your sense that, and you have been outspoken, I think, about just how the DEI programs, at least as constructed, don't include anti-Semitism in the right ways?
We know that they don't, yes.
But does that mean, ultimately, that, you can see it now, that pendulum is swinging back, it feels like, on DEI? I think that's one of the indications is this, is the requirement for the SAT.
Yep.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Or is it that the DEI programs need to be shifted and adjusted in different ways?
So I'm someone who believes that diversity education is incredibly important. We are better colleagues or managers or classmates if we better understand the people around us and what they've been through and their backgrounds. But Andrew, to your point, if your idea of diversity, equity, and inclusion perpetuates the exclusion of Jews. That's wrong. So DEI, as it's currently constructed, needs to be rethought, reimagined, and repurposed.
Right.
Look, and
you're
I believe
okay
that's...
You're okay with DEI short of that?
Well, look, we live in the most multicultural, you know, pluralistic society in the world, Becky. But I think, again, diversity education is important. But when we force our kids to play in the oppression Olympics, everyone loses. So some of the core tenets of what I'd call the DEI ideology definitely don't work, even though diversity and inclusion are incredibly important and
right,
need to still be prioritized.
Out.
That's how I see it. So standardized testing is not something I'm an expert in,
right.
But I want these schools to get diversity right rather than the way they're doing it now.
Jonathan Greenblatt, it's great to see you this morning.
Thank you, guys.
You're on this Friday morning.
That's Squawk Pod for today and for the week. Happy Friday. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern. Follow Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. And remember to vote for us. Show your support for Squawk Pod's nomination for the Webby Awards, celebrating the best of the internet. There is a link to do so in today's show notes. Go right there and show your support. Thank you. And have a great weekend. We'll meet you right back here on Monday.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation. Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.